You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Look at that jump. However, the volume of breaches only rose by 12%, or 663 breaches, many of which you heard here on this radio show, over the same period. So the ITRC claimed that this disparity could be explained by the increase in supply chain attacks. I just mentioned, for example, Excellion. Basically they get hit, and so everybody has got to declare. And so there you go. Now, supply chain attacks have surged by 42% from the fourth quarter of 2020 to the first quarter of 2021, with 27 such incidents affecting 7 million people in the first quarter of 2021. And I can't tell you how many times when I am going through this, most of the data breaches I'm talking about in my regular breaches of the week are indeed supply chain attacks. You know, we get hit. We don't, where we put our data, it's beyond important to understand that. Now, previously disclosed supply chain attacks continue to result in new breach notices. So, for example, and if you're a regular listener, you know I've mentioned in the breaches segment, the Blackbaud breach from basically the middle of 2020 or so. But in the first quarter, there were 62 new notices of Blackbaud breaches. It's still going on. And that was impacting about 146,000 new individuals. That is crazy. Over 12.8 million people and 555 organizations have now been affected by Blackbaud, which was first reported in mid-2020. So these are ever evolving. And eventually you just get caught up in one of these because you've simply outsourced your data somewhere. Now, phishing and ransomware continue to be basically top sources of data compromise in the United States, according to the report. And to quote the president and CEO of ITRC, Eva Velasquez, while the number of data compromises is only up slightly, the rise in supply chain attacks is troubling. Supply chain phishing and ransomware attacks reflect a broader trend that cyber criminals want to exploit multiple organizations through a single point of attack. The most important action people can take to help protect themselves is exercise good cyber hygiene habits. And she is absolutely right. Understand where you are putting your data. And if you are running a business and you are using a free option, understand it's not just being data mined and possibly violating your privacy, especially if you're putting up, let's say, sensitive contract documents in a free cloud like Google or Amazon or something like that. But also make sure that whatever you're outsourcing to a third party, whether it's your billing or your HR, you are vetting them for cyber hygiene, that they have good cybersecurity practices. If not, I may be giving your company a shout out on breaches of the week. And quite frankly, that should terrify you. And so those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
Hey, everybody. Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here. And today I actually want to talk about car privacy and car security. And as I am not an expert in cars, I wanted to bring in an expert. And this is Doug DeMuro. And you might know him from his amazingly popular YouTube channel where he reviews just the coolest cars I've ever seen. And he's got a really awesome website that everybody needs to check out, carsandbids.com as well. But I wanted to talk to him about this because he's the expert. I am not. And Doug, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Now, I wanted to start actually with Tiger Woods, because this is actually what prompted me to really want to do a segment on this for my radio show and obviously my channels and all of that. But he recently got into a crash, and he has stated to the police that he does not remember this crash. But given all the technology in his Genesis SUV, obviously a luxury car, the car has essentially a black box that knows a lot of information around him, including AI that would
that would basically signify if the car knew he was drowsy or distracted and all of this. So by virtue of this, I want to ask, what do you think is the next evolution in car tech in terms of safety or even anything else? You know, is it just improving existing systems, or do you see new and innovative things on the horizon for this?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's so hard to know. If you had asked me 5 years ago or 8 years ago about a lot of this new safety systems that have come on, I would have been surprised, especially that they came on so quickly. We have things like blind spot monitoring, the simple ones, things like blind spot monitoring, which are now common, and lanes, you know, lane keep assist, where it'll steer you back into place and that sort of thing. That stuff is now just completely commonplace. And I always tell people the last 10 years specifically, the advances in safety technology have been insane. People come up to me and they say, "Oh, I'm proud to be still driving my 94 Honda Accord. You know, I'm keeping it going. You know, I'm saving all this money." And I'm like, actually, safety tech just keeps advancing. Whether we're going to have improvements to existing systems or new stuff, I think it will definitely be a combination of both. You're going to have new stuff. You're going to have more self-driving and driver assist. You will have continuing improvements to new systems, and there will be a continued democratization of these new systems. They will continue to start trickling down into cars that are less and less expensive. And you're going to see some of these features that were reserved for, you know, high-end luxury cars only a few years ago suddenly are going to be available in Kias or standard in Kias, Hyundais, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. I remember one where I want to say it was Land Rover. You probably know better than I, but they actually had like a video camera on the A pillar, and the A pillar was like a screen. So it looked like you didn't have an A pillar. I mean, I think these are things that are amazing. And I just recently got to figure out or play with the lane assist. I rented a car and it ended up being a BMW. And as soon as I drifted, it would just pull me right back, which probably makes a lot of BMW drivers a lot more safe.
That is a really helpful feature. It really is. Yeah. You're looking at your phone, which more people are, and automakers know they're not going to stop people from looking at their phone. So some of the tech is trying to combat the results of that. Like, okay, if people are going to do this, how can we keep them in the lane? How can we keep them looking ahead? That sort of thing.
Right. And, you know, and it's interesting too, because I think as we're moving this tech forward and getting these new things, and they're trickling down from the ultra luxury cars in terms of safety and all of that, many car makers really seem though to be way behind in updating existing technologies in cars, with probably the exception of Tesla, that is always running updates on their cars. You know, not to mention their new smaller competitors. I know you recently did a video of yours on the Polestar 2. I just watched it the other day, which I thought was really, really interesting. Everybody should check that video out. But like, for an example, I drove a luxury car for 4 or 5 years before selling it. And every time I would take it back to the dealership, it was under warranty, I would ask, "Do you have any updates for like the Bluetooth in my head unit? You know, that's which controls my speakers. I connect my phone." And the answer was no, they never did in 4 to 5 years. This is a company that prides itself on its race technology, on being one of the best and fastest, most maneuverable cars in the world and all of that. And I was actually able, given my day job, to hack into my own car. You know, and so why do you think these luxury brands, where people are paying the premium, it's not a Honda Civic, you know what I mean? We're talking about, you know, German luxury and all of that. Why do you think these luxury brands, who pride themselves on being on the cutting edge of safety technology or racing technology, are just really falling down? It seems like after they just get out of the dealership, you're on your own.
They're done. The cynical answer to that is they want to get you back in to make more money. I don't think that's the truth, though. I think the truth is that these automakers, that's just kind of the way they've always done it. And doing it the other way is hard. And there was never a huge demand to do it another way, in part because people would just lease a new one, especially with luxury cars. You would get people, the average length of ownership for a luxury car is like 4 years or something. I mean, it's just, it's so small that it has never really mattered that much to most people. And then the automakers don't care that much about the second owner, but they really don't care about the third owner, right? 9 years down the road, car's out of warranty. They hope he comes by the dealership for parts. Right. And I think a lot of people cynically want to say, "Oh, well, this is the automakers trying to thieving, you know, they're scheming to make more money." I think it's that. Then Tesla shows up and says, "Hey, our phone's updated over the air. Like, this is something that obviously should be occurring." And then that they themselves created this demand. Once people saw that it was possible, they thought to themselves, "Oh, you know, it like when Wi-Fi came out on airplanes, you know, then within 6 months you got on an airplane without a Wi-Fi. You're like, what is this piece of crap? You know?
Right.
And I think that sort of started to happen, and now it's becoming more commonplace. And I will say more and more automakers are starting to transition to these over the air updates. You know, Ford's do it now. Jaguar Land Rovers do it now. Not all models, but they're adding in. And I think within 3-4 years, that will kind of be commonplace in the industry. But it was Tesla that started that push for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and they've really been on the cutting edge. Whatever you think of Tesla, I mean, that's one thing right. where I've got to give them credit for, you know, I think that's a really important thing. But, you know, if you're looking at it, you know, we have seen some real privacy violations though, by virtue of, I think, that lack of updating, or simply, I think, not really having that foresight by the manufacturer to say, wait a second, you know, my car needs more privacy in it. So for example, Bluetooth, you know, which I just mentioned was never updated. This basically, in many cars, when you connect your phone, it replicates your mobile phone's data into the right. car when you sync it. It duplicates your phone with like Android Auto or Apple CarPlay right. and all of that. But neither of these things really offer things like encryption or privacy. And so when people like turn over these cars, you see the past phone book or right. a rental car or something like that. But there have also been cases. A couple of colleagues of mine from like 2 miles away hacked a Jeep Grand Cherokee, you know, right. while it was driving down a test track, and were able to slam on the brakes or run right. it off the road and all these kinds of things. And so do you see the NTSB or another federal government agency like them mandating things like data security to thwart cyber attacks like this, and also to ensure the driver privacy? We have privacy for like our health and right. Like our health data. Why don't we have it in a vehicle that we own?
Well, I don't know about, you know, government regulations. Probably you would know more about that. Are there regulatory environments in non-cars, in phones, and things like that? Are there regulatory encrypted, you know, thing?
Yeah. So the United States, to be honest, and when we're talking about the overall compliance of the United States, we are behind. Like compared yeah. to Europe, oh my God, we are behind on right. that. But we do have recourse under the law to basically say, hey, you know, the Facebooks of the world, you know, you have to take the data away. So for example, I know that, you know, you're on the West Coast in California, you fall under the CCPA, which means you can go to Facebook or any other platform and say, forget me, erase right. all my data. You have that right. Me sitting here in Chicago, I don't have that right.
Right,
you
know,
so,
right.
So we're a hodgepodge of these kinds of things. But the reason why I'm bringing this up actually is because I wrote an article in, I want to say 5 years ago at this point, called Google Doesn't Care About the Driverless Car. And the reason why they don't care about the driverless car isn't because of the car itself. They made this Volkswagen Beetle looking thing that probably right. nobody would buy. They didn't care about that. But what they cared about is that one horrific crash with an automated vehicle, like a Tesla that's automatically driving and hits a school bus full of nuns or something. And then the NTSB steps in and says, we need to standardize all of the driverless tech. And Google raises their hand and says, we have the technology and it's already in the car. It's Android Auto. And so by virtue of that, I'm just curious about not just that, but the privacy implications of that.
Right.
Because if Google is running your car and you're driving down the road and you stop by a Best Buy, it'll say tap here to stop your car for right. 10% off. And then Best Buy will literally pay to advertise to you in your car. So
right.
privacy is a concern of mine.
Right. No, I understand. And obviously if there are devices and stuff that have these regulations, then you just have to assume it comes to cars. I think that, like you said, one of the problems is we are behind and almost reasonably so, right? Like this stuff has happened quick and regulators have a very difficult time keeping up with this. I mean, we're already seeing it with self-driving. Regulators are having an enormously difficult time trying to figure out regulations for each state has become different. Some states are more, you know, restrictive than others. And this is a challenging thing for regulators to try to figure out. But as cars, like you said, I mean, I get into a rental car and it says, you know, do you want to sync your contacts and all this? No, not really. I'm going to get back in 3 days. I can live. It's just a weird kind of gray area right now. And that's the reality of being on the forefront of technology. I think you're ahead of regulators and policymakers in Washington, D.C., but you have to assume that more regulations will come. You just have to.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's the hope on that. Cause like I said, I've gone into many a rental car where, you know, I've got simple yeah. utilities and I can literally pull the address right. book from the previous driver.
Oh, all the past cars, you, cars you buy, used cars. You can pull it off used cars. You yeah. go into even just car dealer lots. Think about that. Like you can pop into somebody's, you know, their car's sitting there for sale. You don't even have to buy it. You can go, if you yeah. went onto a Rolls Royce dealer, go into the previous thing. You can find the address right. of every rich guy who's ever, you know.
Right. is call me Bill Gates.
Right.
You know, right. That'd be crazy. Yeah. That's a really good point, actually, you know, and I think in that vein, speaking of like self-driving cars and stuff, I mean, I think there are, you know, if we're talking about hacking or we're talking about privacy, I think there might be, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts on this. I think, and I'm wondering if you think this would actually cause some less thought about issues for owners of things like, let's say, Teslas. So for example, why couldn't a Tesla or another company that has like, let's say a self-driving car simply remote start the car and have it drive itself back to the dealership when you miss a payment, you know, and then send you an email. I wasn't stolen, you know, deadbeat, right. Go pay your bill. Or conversely, wouldn't it be nice to have a car drive itself to the dealership for maintenance? Or, you know, if the alarm goes off and somebody tries to steal it, it locks the doors and drives to the police station. I mean,
these are some benefits. I mean, the repo thing, maybe people wouldn't look at it as a benefit. The automaker would. I have always felt that one of the great benefits of driverless could be you put your dog in the car and send him to the vet. You don't have to do it. Like these things are real. I don't understand, you know, and everybody kind of laughs at me when I say that. But the truth is, like, if we're talking about driverless, these are possibilities. And yeah, why aren't those possibilities too? Obviously, these are down the line. We're a long way from real driverless. But I don't see why that sort of stuff isn't a possibility in the future. I totally think it could be all those things, including sending the car to the dealer for maintenance. I think that is absolutely within the realm if we get to a situation where we truly are trusting cars to drive themselves, which I suspect is further off than most people believe it is.
Yeah. And how long? Well, then that makes me curious, because obviously there's been a huge push for driverless everything. And we've seen these tested for years and people are using these features on the highway. And we've seen videos of people like putting it on and then jumping into the passenger seat and letting the car go. And then, you know, so when do you think then, like, when do you think we're going to, I mean, not Back to the Future flying cars, Marty McFly kind of thing, but when are we actually just going to be like, yeah, let's, you know, Fluffy, get in the back seat and go to the vet?
A long time. I think the difference between driving on a sunny day, if you're in Chicago, I mean, think about this. Anybody can drive on a freeway on a sunny day, including a self-driving car. Right. Think about a winter experience. Think about the lines are gone. Think about there's black ice on the road. We saw those pileups in Texas and stuff over the winter. Right. I mean, I think that's when it becomes a lot more challenging for the self-driving cars. Mm. And getting over the hurdle of weather is incredibly difficult for the self-driving cars just to begin with. That's years away, trying to figure out how to combat that and how to accurately make a car understand the surface that it's on and the changes in its driving dynamics due to those surfaces. Mm. That's probably years away. Then when do we feel comfortable actually letting no one monitor? You know, someone is not sitting in the front anymore behind a steering wheel. That's even more years away. I don't know. I think that we are going to make fantastic advancements in driver assistant self-driving over the next 5-10 years. General Motors has this amazing thing called Super Cruise, which you just kind of sit there and it on the unmapped roads. It steers, it brakes. Tesla Autopilot is obviously famous. A lot of automakers are getting better and better at these. Mercedes' newest one is really fantastic, but they work when it's easy. You know, I've always said, I don't want the system to work on a sunny day on the highway. I want it to work like I can do that. What I want the system to do is work on an icy, cold, snowy, foggy day. Those are the ones where you really want it. And we're a long way off from that. I think we're talking about decades from really being able to not drive ourselves. Maybe our kids will have that experience, but I wouldn't be surprised if we don't.
Right. Well, the CIA needs to make that weather machine so it's sunny.
Right. Maybe that is more likely than a driverless car being able to drive on black ice. You
know, something along those lines, you know. But you know, one of the things I would think of is that every highway would probably be lined with, let's say, wireless infrastructure. You know, so every car is not, you know, an island unto itself. Everything is located through that.
And if that's true, think about what you're saying. I mean, the cost and time requirement in investment there is substantial. So yeah, we could get to that point. And if we do that, that would solve a lot of things for these automakers, I suspect. But you're talking about an unbelievable investment in technology. And that, frankly, that technology would get outdated in 10, 20 years. And you'd have to just like telegraph lines and you'd have to replace it with whatever's, you know, comes next. And I don't know that that's necessarily the solution, although it would be one.
Right. Well, and in that sense, I just thought of this too. When we were looking at countries that are advancing, China, for example, we recently had an issue where the entire autopilot, the source code for that, was stolen by a Chinese national working for Tesla. He uploaded it into his iCloud and then quit and then went to work for the large Tesla competitor in China. So they're integrating this technology now. Do you think, though, they could possibly lead the way in this? They have thousands of miles of high-speed trains. I mean, they're able to pivot and spend on infrastructure in a way that we aren't here in the States.
Maybe, but you got to wonder if it's really infrastructure that we need to be spending on. I think most of the automakers have decided that they can't wait for government to make infrastructure changes. I think most of the automakers have realized they'll be waiting forever. And people have already started to, automakers have already started to take the lead. And so it's like, we better just start doing this. Maybe at some point more changes will be required, but I don't think the automakers are in a position here where they can just be like, yeah, you know, we'll see what the government does. We'll work with the government, whatever. Now, maybe in China, they can work a little bit more closely together and that could help them. But I don't know. I think that that's not the way that this problem is going to be solved. I think it's going to have to be solved by business. Mm.
I think that's a good point, too, because, our technology advances faster than government can regulate it.
Of course.
A lot of our privacy laws were actually, a lot of people don't know this, they were written in the 80s, under Reagan, if you think about it. So without a warrant for years, the police could just go into your phone and find your GPS location. They didn't need to tell you, they could just do it.
Think about what you're saying. Like, it takes government a long time to catch up with regulations, let alone with actual infrastructure, giant costs, that would take however much longer. They don't have as much of an incentive. Meanwhile, the people demand it now. And so they want a self-driving car. They want a driver assist technologies, whatever. The automakers just don't have the luxury of waiting.
Gotcha. So the innovation will basically outstrip the government's ability.
It's got to. There's no way it doesn't.
Right. Otherwise we'd be horse and buggy at some point, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Waiting for the, right. That's exactly right.
Right. Right. And with that, I actually do, outside of the privacy thing, I do want to talk about Tesla real quick as well. I mean, obviously they've taken the world by storm in the last decade or so, and they've just really kickstarted the EV evolution or revolution, depending on when you want to, how you want to say it. But I'm curious, though, and just on your opinion on this, because you obviously know cars better than probably anybody out there, given all the major car manufacturers out there who have decades, literally decades, if not 100 plus years, like Mercedes, for example, experience, they have all this experience building cars and they're now getting on board with this. Look at Volkswagen, like not Volkswagen, but Volkswagen, right? They're rebranding to basically push that in North America. Do you think Tesla can actually survive this playing field? We've obviously seen their stock price just explode and all of that, but are they actually going to be really here to stay? Or is this something like, Tesla's going to get outclassed by like Ford when they release the Ford Mach-E1 Mustang or whatever they're calling it. And Tesla's going to become this software company that sells their technology to everybody else, like they're doing with the batteries right now.
It'll be interesting. I think Tesla is here to stay. If you were to ask me now, I would say, I think Tesla is here to stay. The fans of Tesla are so obsessed that I think that the brand position, they're over the hill of like not, they're not still rolling the ball up the hill trying to get to the other side. Like they're past that. Their fans are so obsessed. The people are so obsessed with the cars that I think that the brand is too valuable to ever go anywhere. The question of do they stand up to rivals is a really interesting one, because the rivals, they've got more experience, whatever, but they have not shown themselves to be capable yet of truly rivaling Tesla. Now, that's changing. I for years thought Tesla had the best screen infotainment system. I no longer think that. I think Mercedes-Benz does. For years, Tesla had the best and only really good autopilot system. I no longer think that. I think General Motors does. Finally, we are starting to see good competitors to Tesla with like the Mustang Mach-E, which I've driven. It's a fantastic car. It is on sale. It just went on sale.
Oh, nice.
And I think that you're going to start to see chipping away. And Tesla has a few disadvantages that aren't discussed that often. The biggest, I think, to me, is quality. I think the Tesla evangelists are obsessed with the brand. They will continue to buy the cars, but the quality has to be there for regular people. I already know some people who have bought Teslas and have gotten out and have gone back to normal brands because the car had to replace the full drive unit. The stuff didn't work properly. The autopilot wasn't working. Sensors had to be replaced and their service experience is not the greatest. And so those kind of things probably need to be addressed But I think that the brand itself is so strong that it's hard to imagine at this point now, it's hard to imagine a world without Tesla. But the legacy automakers are coming and they are starting to chip away a little bit. And they're getting better and better at this whole EV game and the self-driving thing and the technology thing. Tesla was a wake-up call for a lot of brands, and it has kind of run away with this for a long time, but I'm not entirely sure that it probably won't last forever, but I don't think that Tesla goes away.
So I guess what I'm hearing from you then is they're basically the Apple for cars, right? You know, you got to have that iPhone, you got to stand in line for a week to get the latest whatever from Apple.
For now. What is it like in Chicago? In California, everybody wants one. Every kid, you know, when we were kids, you grew up wanting a BMW or a Porsche. 12-year-olds, I talk to 12-year-olds who come up to me and they make your videos. What do you want to drive when you grow up? I want a Tesla. That's what they all say. Do you see that? Do you see that in the Midwest? Are there a lot of them around?
Yeah. So I live in the Chicagoland area and I commute and I've got neighbors that have Teslas. You know, I can go to my local Home Depot or whatever and there will be a couple of Teslas in there. Right. You know, but also understand that as soon as you get out of the outskirts of Chicago, it is all pickup trucks,
right.
You know, so, you know, and I don't think we'll see some of those, Tesla, you know, pickup trucks,
that's a ways away.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or something like that. But if they are like, and that actually brings up one more question I've got, cause it's just, I find this really interesting and you're really knowledgeable on this. You know, if they are right now, the Apple, and you say everybody's chipping away, but they're the Apple, that it product for EV, what happens to the Apple car then?
Yeah, I'm very curious about that. Those brands were just late. If those brands were serious that they wanted to make cars, I hate to say it, but like you said, it's a great way to describe it. Tesla is the Apple.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.